God is alive and powerful, sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing asunder of soul and spirit and of the joints and the marrow, and is a critic of thoughts and intents of the heart. All scripture is God-breathed and is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness, that the man of God might be mature, thoroughly furnished unto all good works. Study to show yourself approved unto God, a workman that does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. Open the word of truth this evening to Ephesians chapter 6 and in your notes to the doctrine of authority. All right, as James tells the believers under his charge, let every man be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger, for the anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God. We are here to take in Bible doctrine. This is the quick to hear part. You should listen at least twice as much as you talk, and this is a time when you should do nothing more than listen and to focus your attention and concentrate on the doctrine that we have before us this evening. This is our increment of time to come apart from the cosmos. We get 4 hours a week, which isn't very much, and in that time we have to try to inculcate the principles of the truth so that you can effectively walk the Christian walk when you are outside the boundaries of the classroom of the local church. So to that end, we have assembled together. The first issue, of course, is taking care of the STA, making sure that it is put aside in its cage so that it does not influence your thinking and how you hear and how you think about doctrine. This is absolutely critical. It is the enemy of all doctrine and, of course, warps and distorts the truth along the lines of whatever your sinful trend may be. So beyond that, of course, you need to do whatever else you need to do. Do not do things that are distracting. Do not talk. Do not play with your pencil. Do not do things that will cause other believers to lose concentration and focus and all of that. So with that all before us, let us prepare ourselves in the usual fashion. Heavenly Father, we thank you for the grace that brings us together once again, for all that you continue to provide so that we can function honorably before you in the angelic conflict. We recognize that the dictum action with honor indicates that we should know what we are doing. We should think about what we are doing in light of the doctrine that we have. When we see failure in our lives, we should judge ourselves rightly and, of course, come to you for the forgiveness that only you can provide. We thank you for all the grace that follows us every day and pray that you will continue to pursue us with grace as we continue to pursue your word, for we ask it in Christ's name. Amen. All right, we're dealing here with the next to last major point in this doctrine, the issues related to authority and the family, starting out with authority in marriage, obviously, in which the husband is the primary authority. But that authority is to be used in a manner that is compatible with what we find in the Scripture. We are dealing now with the family, divine institution number 3 under Roman, under point B here under Roman numeral 9. The primary legal authority and primary moral authority resides with the parents. Children are not here to tell parents what to do. They don't need any of your advice. Kids begin to think, I guess it is about the time 11, 12, 13, somewhere in there, that suddenly they know everything, that there isn't anything they can't handle, that there isn't any issue that they don't have an opinion on, and they begin very often at that time to begin to voice those opinions. And so the challenge then, of course, during adolescence is to remain humble, which most people do not, and the fact is most people never really get out of adolescence, which is a sad commentary, but it's true in the physical realm, and it's also true in the spiritual realm. And at a certain level, you have to grow up beyond the idea that you know it all or that you've got it all together or whatever it is that we know teenagers tend to think. If you hang with it long enough, you'll come to find out your parents weren't quite the idiots you thought they were. They may have been idiots, but they weren't quite the idiots you thought they were. They had a little more on the ball. When you get out there in the real world and find out what it's really like to live day by day, to make a living, to live a life, if you're married, say, under authority, you'll find out that it's not always as easy as it looks. So again, the authority resides with the parents, and just like the authority is with the husband for a particular reason, in order to guide and lead the wife in the proper environment and all of that, and it has to be handled in a proper way, so too, obviously, this divine institution, number three, the authority of the parents has to be handled a proper way, and again, in accordance with the dictates of Scripture. While parents have all authority, we do not countenance or suggest that they ought to abuse that authority, that they ought to abuse their children, either physically, verbally, emotionally, any way at all. That is not the purpose of that authority. The authority is there to teach that child how to grow up and be a good believer. And that's really the essence of what authority in parents is for, is to teach their children how to grow up to be normal, functioning, productive members of society. And in addition, for Christian parents, to be normal, functioning members of a local church. So one, we pointed out this authority comes from God, begins at birth, and continues as long as the child resides in the home. Usually the first 6 months or the honeymoon stage with the child, because they haven't learned that one little two-letter word yet, know that they want to tell you all the time. So enjoy them while they're young and can't talk, because pretty soon they're going to be able to talk, and then you're going to have to start busting butt, because they will run that mouth. And that mouth needs to be stopped a lot of the time. Children that are allowed to run under their STAs are being reinforced that inappropriate activity is tolerated and that they're going to get away with it. And they're going to run into somebody out there in the cosmos who isn't going to tolerate it and who's going to hammer down on them and hammer down on them big time. And the child needs to be taught from the earliest stages that disobedience is not tolerated. And this is a lifelong battle, so I mean, you might as well get used to it. It starts at during that first year sometime. I don't know whenever they become cognizant of, or start to become cognizant of who they are, as they develop self-consciousness and awareness of their environment. Just enjoy them while they're there in the crib and just staring with that blank stare, because that's not going to last very long. And everybody thinks that, they're always in a big hurry. I want my kids to grow up. Oh, well. You'll have plenty of time for ruining that decision as you get older. So the point is, discipline has to be enforced early, often, consistently. If it's not reinforced consistently, it doesn't do any good. I mean, if you're hit and miss with it, it doesn't have any long-term effects. And it is going to be a lifelong battle, so you might as well get used to it. Get used to being the bad guy. Whether you're the mom or the dad doesn't really particularly matter in this one. We all know that children know how to play their parents, and we all know that children generally know that moms are a softer touch than dads, and that they can get away with more with them than they can with dad. And dads generally are the primary disciplinarian in the family. We recognize that, but that doesn't let the mother off the hook. So again, this starts out as long at birth, and continues as long as the child resides in the home. And if you want to have a miserable time in your own home, just let your kids run wild and do what they want. And in a few years, you'll hate them and they'll hate you, and you'll be miserable. And then people will say, well, geez, I wish I would have listened. Well, it's going to be too damn late then. It's going to be too late. By the time they're 10, 11, 12, if you haven't dealt with that STA by that time, good luck, because you're going to need luck, because doctrine probably ain't going to work after that point. You've had time to deal with it, and you got to deal with it early, and you got to deal with it quickly, and you got to deal with it consistently. And we've all seen kids that by the time they're 12, 13, 14, you're not hardly going to reach them. And if they're not reached when they're young, not to say that there aren't exceptions to that, of course there are, and there's always grace, and we recognize that. But the point is that people let these principles slide, and then they wonder why their lives are miserable. Well, let's see, I can tell you why they're miserable. You let these principles slide. And again, so many things in our society and so many things in our culture are just a matter of blowing off one of these, two of these, three of these, and then there you go. And the family is a mess, the kids are a mess, and we wonder what happened. Well, here's what happened. This authority wasn't enforced. You have it for a reason, just like the husband has authority over his wife for a reason. If you have authority, you're expected to use it sometimes, and very often, a lot of times. So you have to decide how to do it. So at the point of marriage, the authority of the parents over the children becomes null and void. At that point, you are required to break it off with your family, as it were, to emotionally separate from them, physically separate from them. Ideally, if I had my way, which I don't, but when I'm king, everybody that gets married is going to move 1,500 miles away from their family. So there can't be none of this failure to cut the apron strings, a failure to deal with these issues, and all of that. And we see it all too often, meddlesome parents and children that never grow up because the parents are constantly bailing them out of one jam or another. And continuing to do that just continues to exacerbate the problem. And so at some point you just have to get tough with this. People don't want to get tough with this. I know, I recognize it. They don't want to get tough with this, and it's gonna kill you. At some point, it can do you in. So, A, it's the responsibility of the man, as we closed last night with, to separate from his parents' household. That's to tell mom and dad, butt out. I'm not hearing any more about you. I don't want to hear any more about what you think of my wife, my husband, etc., my kids. I don't need your opinion to function. Thank you. Keep it to yourself. Establish your own household and make certain that both parents know that they are, interference is not going to be tolerated. And generally speaking, of course, parents are always well-meaning. God love the stupid fools. They're always well-meaning, wanting to do what they think is helpful, and in many cases, it's just not helpful. And so you have to say, you know, let it go. Three, as the authority, parents are responsible to bring children up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord, enforcing on them the same doctrine they themselves believe and to which they adhere. Ephesians 6:4, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger. That's the negative part of that, and we will deal with that as well. But bring them up in the discipline, first discipline, then instruction. And they both have to be in equal proportions, and they both have to be there to reinforce. You can tell your children what the rules are all day long, every day, but if you don't enforce the rules, it doesn't make any difference. They're not going to get this stuff by osmosis. They don't just sort of somehow suck it all up and get it straight. Kids are like little sponges, but primarily they're like blotters. They just suck it all up and get it backwards, mostly. And then that's how it comes out. And so one of the big dangers is, obviously, as a parent, and we see this because parents in our culture have been raised to be permissive, to tolerate almost anything in the name of we don't want to offend their little darlings. We don't want to thwart their little psyches in any way. We don't want to blunt their little creative urges or whatever it is that causes them to write on the walls. And so we don't deal with a lot of things. And you see parents that they themselves apply the doctrine of separation, and then they turn around like their kids associate with any jackass out there. And that's wrong. If you don't enforce on your children the same doctrine, you believe you're doing them a great disservice. And so parents have to, and I know you say, well, this is hard because it's one thing after another. I know, it's called the daily grind of the Christian life. So you have to enforce on them the same doctrine you believe. We don't separate from the cosmos. We don't get involved in certain things. And if people think we're weird, let them think we're weird. Fine, who cares? Who cares what they think? And at least we're not making you run around wearing one of those little Amish beanie hats. So, you know, there you go. So it's not as bad as it could be. We could be like real legalistic or something, but we're not. So again, that's the challenge. Okay, no, you can't do things that conflict with Bible class. No, you can't relocate here or there to do this or that. No, you've got to stay in Bible class. You've got to keep your priorities straight. And on and on and on and on it goes. And you got to reinforce again with discipline and with consistent instruction. You can't just scream at them either. You've got to sit down and explain to them calmly, rationally, here's what the issues are. Number one, you should never discipline your children while you're angry. That is inappropriate. You don't punish them out of anger. That's not the way God does it. It's not the way you're to do it. You are to discipline them. I used to just send them off to their room, let them consider the errors of their ways for a little while, and that was nearly as effective as punishment. Because the anticipation, the glorious, delicious anticipation of that spanking that they knew was coming. Oh, man, that just works on the little child's psyche, doesn't it? And I mean, you know, you hit them with that first swat and you thought you killed them. They're screaming bloody murder. I mean, my favorite line was, I'll never do it anymore, Daddy. Stop, Daddy. Don't spank me. I'll never do it again. But Daddy didn't listen. Good for him. My daddy at least had a little on the ball. And he recognized that physical corporal discipline was necessary, and I'm not even sure the guy was a believer, and he's got more sense than most believers I know. Or he did, he's dead now. But he had more sense than most believers I know. He was consistent, he was firm, and yet he was loving. And I never doubted that he loved me, even when he disciplined me severely. And I always knew deep down, he didn't discipline me because he wanted to. He disciplined me because I deserved it. And kids that don't get disciplined when they deserve it grow up to be idiots, let's face it. So many people are so psychologically screwed up because they never got any real sound, consistent discipline. And they don't know how to deal with life. They can't function almost as normal adults because they never were disciplined. And so this is a part of it. I mean, why does the verse say this? Why discipline first, then instruction? But you do have to sit down and talk to them, spell out the issues. You can't just scream at them and assume they're going to get it. They don't get it that way. You have to teach them, and that takes time. That means you may have to knock off work a little early and go home and spend some time talking to your kid. Oh, God, shudder, shudder. The great American nightmare. We have to spend time with our children. How awful. No, it's not that awful. If you do it right, if you don't do it right, it becomes awful. That's the problem. For since children are naturally stupid under the STA, and I do mean S-T-U-P-I-D, I don't soften this down. I mean stupid, I mean ignorant. I mean they're as close to retarded as you can get. And under their STAs, they couldn't add two and two together and come up with four many times to save their souls. Why? Because that's the nature of the STA. We have it all. We all did it. We all grew up with one. And everybody here that's an adult now looks back and says, oh, my God, how stupid I was. And we all know it. So, again, this is why you're here as a parent. You're their last line of defense. The authority is given to the parents to deal with the old sin nature as early and as often as necessary. Proverbs 22:15. Proverbs, of course, has as much to say about all this as any section from the wisest man in the world. So we'll have to assume he was a pretty shrewd about this. He had a good father, apparently, who loved him and taught him the discipline was necessary, and he taught it to his kid. Proverbs 22:15, foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. I mean, wrapped up in there tighter than any Christmas present you could ever get. It's there. But the rod of discipline will remove it far from him. And so, again, this is all under attack, as almost everything is. I mean, good grief, we can't spank them. They'll turn you into HRS. Like I told my kids, call them one time. That's it. Go ahead. Tell them how bad you got it, because you can go live somewhere else. And most parents ain't got the spine to make that stick, though, do they? But I did. They didn't ever push me on it either. But then again, I never abused them. I mean, they got disciplined. They got spanked. We didn't slap them. You don't humiliate them out in public, dragging them around by their clothes or the hair of their head. God gave them a place to be disciplined, and it was called the butt. Everybody knows where the butt is, don't they? You're sitting on it right now. And that's where God made for children. It's very fleshy. Guess what? It may get bruised from time to time. Oh, shudder, shudder. How horrible. No, it's not horrible at all, in fact. And I guarantee you, if I hit you one good shot with a rod, you're going to bruise. But we never used a rod. We always used a belt or a spoon or whatever. But you don't use clothes hangers on a kid, for God's sake. I don't see that in here. So again, the extremes out there, there are abusive parents. I understand that. But God Almighty, we aren't going to see anything out in front of Sarasota High School about all the rebellious kids that get dealt with, are we? Oh, we're going to see these little windmills for the little abused kids. I'm not for child abuse, don't get me wrong. But good Lord, you don't hear anything about the parents doing their job right to discipline some little STA and kept him from becoming a criminal and a monster. No, they're not ever mentioned on the news to speak of. It's just that all parents are by nature, theoretically, according to today's standards, are all abusive, and we can expect that they will all be abusers. Well, good grief, that's wrong. Five, failure to do so condemns the child to a life of stupidity under the old sin nature. Proverbs 23:13-14, do not hold back discipline from the child. Although you beat him with the rod, he will not die. I've never have seen any child die from a spanking. Never seen one. I'm 50 years old. Never seen a child die from a spanking. And I'm talking about a spanking where they get across the bed and you tan them black and blue. They don't die from that. I haven't seen one yet. I'll bet you money God just keeps them alive just to twit the liberals out there. It's only going to hurt them momentarily, but it needs to hurt. People need to understand that when you do certain things wrong, there are going to be consequences and they're going to hurt. Those spankings you give them when they're 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and then they get to the age where they let you know, I'm too old to spank. Really? Want to bet? I got the authority that says you aren't. And I'll bet you money. God backs me up. Got some money you want to lose while you're getting this spanking? You're not too old to spank. And there comes a point, obviously, at which you have to learn other forms of discipline, too. You have to be smarter than the child. That's where most parents fail. The kid's 10 times smarter than they are. I'll take my spanking because that doesn't bother me. 5 minutes later, I'll forget about it. Well, let's find something that hurts a little more then. You know what I've noticed motivates normal people? Money. Money. Well, how about we start fining you then? We'll just treat you like a professional baseball player. You act up, you get fined. And figure out what works. Grounding, spanking. But most people don't even use spanking at all ever. So, but beyond the point, obviously, you have to figure out other things that work. Well, no, you can't go there. No, you can't do this. Nope, give me the car keys. There you go. Oh, you can't take my car because I bought it? Want to bet? Watch me and see. You better be looking for another place to live by tonight then, because you ain't coming back here. Well, I pay for that car. I don't care. It's my house. You're going to live according to my rules. See, most parents don't have the spine to do that. They'll talk a big fight, but they never follow through. So Proverbs 23:13-14, although you beat him with the rod, you will not die. You will beat him with the rod and deliver his soul from Sheol. 6, failure to deal with the child's STA demonstrates a total lack of love for the child, Proverbs 13:24. This is what most people don't get. They think I'm being nice. No, you're not. You're being an idiot. You're not being nice. You're demonstrating that you care more about yourself than you do about your kid. Proverbs 13:24, he who spares his rod hates his son, and he who loves him disciplines him diligently. And diligently means on and on and on every time it's necessary. You say, well, what if I have to punish him 10 times a day? Be willing to do it 11 then. That better be your attitude. You want to push me 10 times? I'm ready to go 11. Round 12, here we go. And every round you're going to lose. You're going to come out on bottom, and you just make the child aware of that. And eventually, once children know that they don't have their bluff in on you, it's amazing how different they are, isn't it? I've had little kids, you know, we just had a little sit-down and a little talk-to. I didn't have to spank them or discipline them or anything. I just made them sit there and look at me. That'll kill them right there. Just say, nope, that ain't going to fly. Let's see if you can deal with this. Now you're going to deal with me. And you deal with the little STA, and the little STA finally realizes, oh, holy cow, this is the first idiot I haven't been able to push around. I've got my bluff in on everybody but this jackass. Well, what am I going to do? Okay, well, you win. And then they'll give up and go their way. They'll give in, trust me. You just have to be stronger than they are, smarter than they are, and you got to be willing to fight the battle longer than they do. They used to call it in boxing, when you get to rounds 11, 12, 13, 14, and 15, those were the championship rounds. The first 10 rounds didn't matter a whole lot. I mean, they did, but the last four rounds were what really mattered or so, because that was what determined who was going to win the fight. And so the fight goes on. You better figure out that you're in a 15-rounder with this kid, and you better deal with it for 15 rounds. And some parents go out and they take a round or two off. You can't afford to do that. You are making a huge mistake if you do that. All you're doing is fueling the fire of that little STA. And just letting it know, well, you know, there's times I'm going to let you get by with it. Well, then that's all the reinforcement they need. Okay. All I'm going to, what their next thought is, I got to find those times. I just got to find those times. I know they're out there. Mom's an idiot. Dad's an idiot. I just got to know how to play them. And so you grow you up a little player. And they're going to sucker everybody, or so they think. But see, they're going to run into people like me. And that little sucker of yours ain't ready for me, trust me. Because they're just unprepared for somebody that's not going to back down to them. And the kids are never going to push me around. Period. I don't care if they're 1, 10, or 15, or 30. They're never going to push me around. It's not going to happen. And if you let them push you around, you deserve what you get. I hope they push you in a mud puddle. Maybe it'll clean you up. You figure out, God, I'm filthy. I let that little kid push me around. Well, you don't do it. Seven, as a parent, you do not have to be perfect. You'll hear this back from your kids as they get older, too. Yeah, but you do. Yeah, go ahead and bring that one up. That's real smart. Tick me off while you're in trouble. Then I'll just have to send you to your room for another 30 minutes so I can calm back down again. What your failures are not an issue. That is what we like to call a psychological ploy to focus the person on some other issue that's really not germane to the subject. So when you're disciplining your child, you know, they're going to hit you with, well, you do this and such. I say, you know, this is the last time I better hear that out of your mouth. Because if you want to try that little tack on me again, you're going to have more trouble. What I do is not the issue. What we're talking about right now is what you do. And that's what we're going to keep talking about. These are debating techniques that people use, shift the blame, focus the thing somewhere else. And it's also called ad hominem attacks. That's an attack on the man himself. And so if you can't win a debate, just point out how bad they are. Well, that's anybody that knows anything about debate won't fall for that one. I won't fall for it. So as a parent, you don't have to be perfect, but you must be willing to engage in this life long-term battle for the spiritual welfare of your children. Proverbs 19:18. Discipline your son while there is hope, and do not desire his death. And the reality is the hope is when he's young, because once you get past a certain point, you're really wasting your time. The deeds are done by then. When you get kids and they're already 15, 16, 17 years old, they've already pretty well got everything figured out about what they're going to get away with. They're not dumb. Some parents are not willing to address their own STA problems and thus are not able to effectively deal with those of their children. If you're maladjusted to any of these principles we're talking about, you're maladjusted towards your parents, you're maladjusted towards your wife, your husband, you're maladjusted towards your job. Kids are going to pick up on this. And if you're not dealing with these issues in your own personal life, you're not going to be able to deal with them in their life. It's not going to happen. 9, tolerance of STA activity not only reinforces in the mind of the child that such activity is acceptable, it also influences other children that observe it in adverse ways. Because the reality is, this doesn't all happen in a vacuum. This happens in the real world. And the other kids are watching. One of the things I learned pretty early on was if you'll listen to kids, you can learn a lot. They'll tell you what they're thinking. And sometimes all you got to do is listen to them when they don't think you're listening, because they typically don't think parents pay that much attention anyway. But you'd be astonished at some of the things you would hear. I figured out not too long, pretty early on, that I would never have to discipline my youngest child as much as my oldest. They'll remain nameless, you know. Doctrine of privacy, you know. Because I heard her say one time, I just watched what Michael did, and there goes the privacy. I just watched what Michael did and learned not to do that. It's what we call the negative example of doctrine. But if the kids, you know, well, that's at least one whole deal I won't have to deal with because there I got this one figured out. Now, you say, well, they're not doing that out of love. I don't care why they're doing it. Some people are just dumb about this stuff. Well, I want my kids to do things for the right reason. I don't give a flying flip why they do it, as long as they do right. Now, we'll get to the motivation later on. I just want obedience in the beginning. And that's the way God deals with us. He doesn't, where does the fear of the Lord lead to? It's the beginning of wisdom, I thought. So the first thing you're going to, if you're going to learn anything, you're going to start out under fear. And people like to soften this down and say, well, it doesn't really mean fear. Yes, it does. You better be very, very afraid of the man who can destroy you in hell forever. And all you better reinforce on your kids is, I'm not here to be your friend. We ain't friends, we ain't partners, and you're going to be sorry you ever met me. That was out of 48 hours, Eddie Murphy. But the point is, you better be willing to take that attitude. See, we got this society out there, oh, you got to be friends with your children. I heard a black lady the other night with not an ounce of doctrine that knew 10 times better than that. She was funnier than hell, but she was right. I was about ready to have her come in and teach one night. We're canceling class. We're going to comedy club. You can get as much doctrine there as you can for me. Well, not on every issue. I wouldn't have wanted everybody to hear everything she was saying. But she was right on that one. She just laughed, friends of my kids. Yeah. That's not why you're here. You're not here to be liked. You're not even here to be admired or respected. You're here to be obeyed. And until you get that down, you're never going to take the next step properly. So again, this is the world out there. They've got all these ideas, you know, how we're going to make better children. The reality is, up until about the 50s, the kids were almost, you know, turned out pretty normal. For the most part. I mean, not that there weren't bad kids and all that, but you knew who they were. You could tell by the way they dressed. Oh, not like today, right? Of course you can. You can tell the idiots out there just by the look of them. And some believers are so out of line on this, it's not even funny. They're out there, well, I don't want to be just like everybody else, but I am just like everybody else. Well, then why are you doing it? So, again, the point of all this is you've got to deal with the child. You've got to deal with it effectively. You've got to deal with it long term. You've got to be diligent about it. And you've got to commit yourself to this fight, and it is a fight. And if you're going to do it right, it's going to be difficult. And obviously, there's extremes to all of this. As we pointed out, we are not encouraging you at all to the extremes. Screaming at your child, you'd be a lot better off quit screaming and just grab that paddle. And if you can't find one that's good, I'll make you one. I'll make you one that'll work. I'll make you one that'll sting. So, but I can't discipline them for you. That's your job. So again, other children that see all this, guess what they learn? And if you don't believe me, just ask Laura after class. She works every day at about 20 of these little monsters in the preschool. And ask her how the nasty child affects the other ones. If you don't believe me, just ask somebody that's practically out there in it every day. And what kind of effect these little FTAs have on each other. And so all you're doing is shooting yourself in the foot if you don't deal with this stuff. It is just going to snowball with the other kids, and you're going to have more problems than you started with. 10 children that will not line up with the royal imperatives and have reached the legal age place themselves under the doctrine of separation and leave the parents no choice. Matthew 10, 34 through 37. This is under the principle of loving the Lord more than we love everybody else, including our families. Doesn't mean we don't care about them, but hey. At this point, they won't line up to the royal imperatives. You better separate from them at the drop of a hat and drop your own hat and make it that quick. How fast can I separate from you? In a New York minute, that's like, what, 12 seconds? That's all it takes? No, not that long. For I came here, I do not think I came to bring peace. This is not peace in the sense of warfare here. This is peace in the sense of inner peace and all, or peace in, like in family relationships, we might say. Internal in a family. Everybody thinks, well, I get on doctrine, my family's all going to love this. Yeah, right. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword, conflict. For I came to set a man against his father, and a daughter against her mother. See, doctrine divides families. People don't like to admit that. They don't like to deal with it. They don't like to acknowledge it. It divides families. It's not my fault. I didn't do it. I know he did. Oh, Jesus did. He's the one that brought the sword, not me. It was his word, not mine. And so here's the issues. And how many royal imperatives do you have to blow off before you're going to blow somebody off? I don't know. That's your call. But I got an idea in my mind what's acceptable and what's not. They start blowing off the doctrine of separation. They start blowing off authority. They start blowing off all kinds of other principles. Well, it's not going to be long until they're headed down the track to destruction. And it shouldn't take you long to figure it out. And a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, man's enemy shall be the members of his own household. He who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. He who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And so the reality is that doctrine makes this an issue. Jesus made it an issue. He applied it in his own family, so you can't very well say, well, he didn't do it. Yeah, he did. There's every evidence that he did not let his family interfere with him at all, even remotely. 11 children who are disciplined in the ways of sound doctrine under firm but loving parents, although it may be traumatic at the time, will become a source of blessing to their parents. Proverbs 23, 24, and 25. And this is why, unfortunately, most people don't have a good relationship with their grown children. Why? Because they weren't dealt with properly when they were children. And this goes back to 2 years, 3 years, 4 years old. See, people tell me, you can't spank a child before they're five. Oh, God, you've waited about 4 years too long. You have waited about 4 years too long to start. You're already behind the eight ball. And I like it when people look at me like, well, my children don't need as much discipline. Just shoot me in the head. What do you mean your children don't need as much discipline? Those little angels. I've seen them. They're not angels. They got little head horns coming out their head. You confuse angels with devils. And guess what? All kids need discipline. Nobody's above it. His foolishness is bound up in the heart of everybody's kids but yours. No. Not at all. Proverbs 23, 24 and 25 here. The father of the righteous will greatly rejoice. He who begets a wise son will be glad in him. Let your mother, your father and your mother be glad. And let her rejoice who gave birth to you. And also Proverbs 29:17. If you do this right, God, you can actually have a solid family relationship. And me and Dan discussed this at length, Dan Brown in Oklahoma City, about the nature of the relationship that we have with our families. And it's all based on doctrine. He's like me. Most of his family on the upside of it, his mom and dad and all that, they were all negative. You don't have, his brothers are all negative. He's just like, in some ways, we have a lot in common. And we'll be sitting around talking from time to time, and he'll just rejoice in the fact that, you know, because my kids are on sound doctrine, I can enjoy my grandkids. I don't have to separate from them, all of this. And he recognizes what a great benefit it is. And he'll be the first to acknowledge, well, I wasn't a perfect parent. I didn't do everything right. But he did a lot of things right. And when he wasn't, his good friend Ron was there to tell him. Hey, by the way, you might want to tighten it up on these little snots. Yeah, that people appreciate that. They always like me. They always just say, thank you, Ron. Oh, no, Ron shouldn't deal with my kids. Hey, if I dealt with them, they might be better off. Who knows? That's a sad reality in some cases. And we discussed different things. You know, we both were raising teenagers at the time. I was going through seminary. So, again, we had a lot of things in common. But we look back now and we say, you know, it was all worth it. Even though you weren't always the good guy. It was all worth it. Proverbs 29:17, correct your son and he will give you comfort. I'm wondering when that one kicks in. I think it must be about when they're 35 or 40. I'm not sure. But at some point, I know this verse is true. It's got to be true or it wouldn't be in here. He will also delight your soul. So 12, all parents like the wise father of Proverbs must be willing to constantly make Bible doctrine the issue. I'm not going to read all these passages, but they all lead off pretty much with the idea of listening, getting the commandments, and making your heart attentive to wisdom. And forget all the other benefits that you have out of all of this. Think of the benefits you're giving your children as they grow up with doctrine that you didn't have and I didn't have. And all the things they're going to miss, all those, you know, that night in jail, that was fun, wasn't it? You want them to experience everything you experience? But see, there's probably things you don't want to talk about that you experienced, am I right? We don't want to tell them the whole story of what it's like living out there under your SDA. All the fun things, running from the police, you know, that kind of thing. Being in the wrong place at the wrong time. You know, going to those fun parties where people throw up in your car. I mean, you know, those are the neat, cool things that you miss out on, you know, by being on doctrine. I mean, I long for those days. Yeah. No, I don't. All right, so all these things, receive my sayings, treasure my commandments within you. Make your heart, your ear attentive to wisdom. Make your heart, you got to pray about this. If you cry out for discernment, verse 3, lift your voice for understanding. Proverbs 3:1 and following, my son, do not forget my teaching. But let your heart keep my commandments. For length of days and years of peace, of life and peace they will add to you. 4:1 and following again, all of these, you could read these whole chapters, of course, but... hear, O sons, the instruction of a father, and give attention that you may gain understanding. For I give you sound teaching. Do not abandon my instruction. When I was a son to my father, tender of the only son in the sight of my mother, then he taught me and said to me, let your heart hold fast my words. Keep my commandments and live. And also you can see 5:1 and following and 6:1 and following. All these things are, you know, basically starting out with pay attention. Do what I've told you. Listen. 13, there are a sufficient number of horror stories in the Bible that demonstrate the awful results of permissive parents that do not make the issues of doctrine stick in the lives of their children. A, Rebecca suffered the divine discipline of never seeing her favorite son again due to her actions that undermined the authority of her husband. Genesis 27, if you remember that story, Rebecca was going around behind Isaac's back, playing favorites with Jacob. And if you understand the background of this, both Rebecca and Jacob understood the doctrinal issues. That Jacob was positive and Esau was negative, but they weren't willing to wait and let God work it out. They had to do it their way. How many moms have we seen do this in history? Rush their kids through something, unbeknownst to dad, because they just knew what they were doing was right. I've seen it over and over and over again. Mothers that are just so certain they're right, they don't feel the need to bounce it off their husband. Well, guess what? That is a dangerous game to play. And this little game she played here cost her son forever. She never got to see him again. That was it. I'm not going to read the whole passage here, but Rebecca, verse 5, I've got it in my Bible. Rebecca was eavesdropping. I wonder why wives do that. What are they listening for? While Isaac spoke to his son Esau. Listening is not a good translation there. It is listening. It's the word Shema to hear. But in this context, it means she was eavesdropping. She was trying to find out what was going on. So Rebekah said to Jacob, behold, I heard your father speaking to your brother Esau. So now, my son, obey me as I command you, verse 8. And so, oh, here we go. Now mom's in charge. A duck. Here it comes. Can you smell the discipline? Can you smell what God's been cooking? He's going to hammer you. He's going to pound you until you are sorry you've ever done this. And Rebecca, you know, she probably really appreciated this. No, she's so out of line, it's unbelievable here. And this all blows up in her face. And then, of course, Esau's wanting to kill Jacob. That's always fun. That works out well in your family when one child's just wanting to kill the other one. B, Eli's failure to properly discipline his sons eventually cost them their lives, 1 Samuel 3:13. And Eli, and this is one of the things you see in here, that this is very important in my opinion. We strive to be as accurate and as sound in doctrine as we can. Now, that's commendable. I'm not saying this because that's not what we should do. We should do all that. But I've seen people that are so accurate in doctrine. They can dot their doctrinal I's and cross their doctrinal T's. They can give you the attributes of God with their eyes closed. They can do all these things. And yet when it comes down to simple functioning in a family environment, they can't do the first thing right. Well, guess what? Doctrine has a whole lot to say about this stuff. And this idea of, well, all I got to do is know how to rebound. No, there's quite a bit more to it than that. And so you've got to be willing to look at these. And you look at some of these great believers. I'm not saying Samuel wasn't a great believer. He was, but he was an awful father. You can be a great believer and an awful father. Is that really what you want to hear at the Bema seat? Great believer, awful father. Because you're going to be evaluated on this stuff. These are principles of doctrine. David, in some ways, was that way as well. He was a great king, but not such a good father. And he even had his moments of not being a great king. You know, sacrificing your own men. That's not really what I would call a hallmark of greatness. 1 Samuel 3:13. Which is interesting because if you look back in chapter 12 first, I want you to look back in chapter 2, I'm sorry, 1 Samuel 2. Now Eli, verse 22, was very old, and he heard about all his sons were doing to all Israel. How they would lay with the women who served at the doorway of the tent of the meeting. This is kind of like their own little harem they had there. And he said to them, "Why do you do such things, the evil things that I hear from all these people? Know, my son, for the report is not good which I hear the Lord's people circulating." Why didn't he just stand and say, "God, those busybodies and gossips"? That's how some people would deal with it. "Oh, they're just gossiping." No, what they're saying is correct. You should be listening. If one man sins against another, God will mediate for him. But if a man sins against the Lord, who can intercede? But they would not listen to the voice of their father, for the Lord desired to put them to death. And so you might think from that passage, you might say, well, Eli gave it his best shot. Or we're talking about Eli. I'm sorry, I said Samuel earlier. But then in verse 13 of chapter 3, "I have told him that I am about to judge his house forever." In other words, his line's coming to an end. This is it for him. "For the iniquity which he knew, because his sons brought a curse on themselves, and he did not rebuke them." And you say, well, he talked to them. Well, apparently he didn't talk long or hard or sternly enough. Apparently he didn't get the job done. And this ends up, anyway, he kills them. God just kills them, finally. They die the sin unto death. See, David's refusal to challenge the STA of Adonijah led to his arrogant attempt to usurp Solomon's throne, 1 Kings 1:6. These aren't necessarily all of them in the Old Testament, but these are certainly some of them. We do know that David's son, Absalom, was a real spiritual wreck, and David was no great influence on him. So you have to deal with all these things and deal with them and all that. People want to focus on, well, David was a man after God's own heart. Yes, he was. I'm not saying he wasn't. But to see all that and to avoid the obvious failures and not talk about them, to me, doesn't give you a full picture of the man. 1 Kings 1:6. Now Adonijah, the son of Haggith, exalted himself, saying, "I will be king." Verse 5, "For he prepared himself chariots and horsemen, and his father had never crossed him at any time." Oh, this is a good way to raise kids, isn't it? "By asking him, 'Why have you done so?' And he was also a very handsome man and was born after Absalom." So he thinks he's good looking, and this makes him arrogant. Well, number one, God can take your looks in a New York minute. You think, well, I'm handsome. I'm all that and more. Oh, God can wipe all that out. Don't worry. It just takes one little accident, and you'll be walking around with one eye and half a nose. You won't be quite so attractive at that point then, maybe. You know, God knocks all your teeth out. You know, you can gum them to death. Impress the women with that. So, but this guy, he thought he was all that. And, you know, his dad never stopped him. Never said, "Hey, you know, you're an arrogant." Fill in the word, blank. Little kid. And so he grew up to be an arrogant big kid. That's all he was. And so here again, David didn't challenge him, though. Just let him go. And so what do we have? 14, "As parents, you are not to abuse your authority over your children. You should wisely, fairly, and consistently give them the discipline they need, as per the verse we've seen before, Ephesians 6:4. This means you don't abuse them again. Screaming at them is a waste of time. Parents that scream at their kids are like, you don't ever need to raise your voice. You handle this right, and you won't even have to raise your voice. You might have to go up 2 or 3 decibels. Hello? And that'll get their attention. I hear people screaming at the top of their lungs at their children. God, first, it's an embarrassment. Don't you have any self-control, for God's sake? Control yourself. Get your STA under control and deal with your child. And you don't do it by screaming. Screaming doesn't do anything. If I thought it did, I'd be screaming right now. But it doesn't. You've got to be fair. You've got to be consistent. The discipline has to be there. And that's what you've got to do. There's no easy, cheap, cut, shortcuts, ways around this. This is the way it has to be done. If there was, I'm 50, I would have learned a few of them by now. There aren't any. Until they get out of the house, then you say, thank God I'm done. Punch me out, I'm off the clock. And not until then. Then you can. So again, you don't abuse them, you don't slap them, you don't, you know, grab them up. I see people jerking their kids around by the arms, you know, all of that. If they need to whip them, take them by the hand, lead them right to the bedroom, bust their butt. And do it, you know, say, well, I have to do that 20 times a day. So be it, that's your niche. Live with it. 20 times a day, if that's what it takes, that's what it takes. They say, that's a lot of work. You should have thought about that before you got pregnant. And you guys should have thought about it before, you know, you enjoyed your little moment in the sun, shall we say. You're just as much to blame. And you're just as much responsible. So 15, parents must recognize that moral authority is not abrogated. Hence, even the child still has limited authority, and very limited authority to act, and moral authority to address immoral restrictions or commands, even apart from that delegated by the parents. In other words, if you're a child and you know something's wrong biblically, and your parents tell you, you got to do this, you have the right to say no. You have the right to say, I'm not going to do it. Also, be aware that when you refuse, there may be repercussions. But you better pray about it, you better know you're right, and you better have very clear biblical grounds for what you're doing. If you're a child and you're blowing off authority, you better have a reason, and it better be a sound biblical reason. And it better be a moral imperative. It can't just be, well, they were out of fellowship when they told me that. That doesn't cut it. They might be out of fellowship when they tell you something, but that doesn't mean they're wrong. So you have to, again, but we have to acknowledge the children don't have to obey immoral commands any more than women do to their husbands. Children have the right to think through these things. 16, it is very important for children, as well as parents, to be clear on their authority and their relationships to all authorities. 17, this is all the more important in Christian homes where the responsibility to be in fellowship and take charge of one's own Christian life are to be taught and encouraged. And see, this is the biggest problem we have. If parents haven't taught their children how to run their own Christian life. And that's sad, because that's where the primary responsibility lies in raising these kids with their parents. And so people say, well, and there's two extremes, obviously, and I've heard them both. Well, I did all that I could, and my kids turned out to be an idiot anyway. Well, first, that's an exception. That is not normally the rule. And maybe, perhaps, you're a little deluded. Maybe you didn't do all you could. Maybe you failed in a lot of areas big time. And you're just not willing to admit it. And it's easier then just to blame the child. I've seen parents do that. And then there's the other extreme. Well, I didn't discipline them at all, and they turned out fine. Again, that would be the exception, not the rule. And are you wanting to encourage people? I mean, I don't see that encouraged in the Bible at all. So again, there are responsibilities on both ends of this thing. And if you got the authority, you've got the majority of the responsibility. So what we want to try to teach our children is how to live the Christian life effectively for themselves. That's what we're here for. And we want to encourage them to think for themselves. You don't want to raise your kid to where you do all their thinking for them. What are you going to have when they're 19? An idiot that can't think. That's all you're going to have. And that's not what you want. Well, 10 concluding observations. A, authorities exist in every area of life because God has chosen to place certain members of the human race in control of others. Take it up with him if you don't like it. B, the principle of authority is designed to provide order, which is clearly the method by which God operates. Satan is the author of disorder and confusion, which comes from arrogance that leads to the rejection of authority. 1 Corinthians 14, 33 and 40, and I am going to move through this pretty quickly because I want to wrap this up tonight. I think you've had enough authority for the rest of your lives, probably, or at least for a week until I decide to review this again. 1 Corinthians 14:33, God is not a God of confusion, but a God of peace. And verse 40, therefore let all things be done properly and in an orderly manner. And James 3:16 deals with the fact that Satan is the author and the STA is the conduit for all this disorder. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder in every evil thing. And this comes from human viewpoint or demonic wisdom as seen in the previous verse. See, those that have not been given authority, those that have been given authority at any level are responsible to exercise that authority within the sphere that God has authorized. If you step out of that authority sphere, you are out of line. I don't care how much authority God's given you. I don't care if you're the ranking authority in the church age right now. That means you're a pastor teacher. You overstep your authority and you're out of line. Doesn't matter what you think you're doing. The same thing's true of parents, same thing's true of husbands, same thing's true of employers and all of that. See, my employer tells me, well, when you get off work, I want you to thus and such. Don't have to obey. I'm not under your authority when I'm off work. Don't have to obey you when I'm off work. So you got to understand where the sphere of authority ends. Now, if you're on the job and he says, I'd like you, it's 5 minutes before you leave, and you're all ready to go, and you're sitting there twiddling your fingers, and he says, I'd like to... Thank you. See, it's like 5 minutes before class, and now the pastor's out of fellowship. But it's 5 minutes before you got to leave, and he says, I want you to do this and such. Well, then the authority hasn't ended. So you better not step across that line and tell him no. But 5 minutes you're out the door, it's different. And so you got to know where the authority ends, and it's got to be clear in your head. And so again, for instance, you got to deal with that. D, no one has total authority over anyone else, period. Now you say, well, I've always heard different. Well, you've heard wrong. Nobody has total authority over anybody except God. God's the only one that has total authority over anybody. All authority has limits due to the reality that volition exists, and that demands that each person be responsible for his own choices. So all of us have authority over our own lives, and you have to decide how you're going to use that authority, and hopefully you'll use it wisely. E, however, that does not lessen the fact that we are to actively submit ourselves to the authorities God has placed over us. Obey them and accept their guidance, as per Hebrews 13:17. We've seen that verse a number of times. Obey your authorities. Obey your leaders and submit to them. And see, this is an active thing. This isn't you sitting there going, I hate that so-and-so, but I'm going to submit. That's not submission. That's not coming from the heart. You want to actively do it with the proper mental attitude. That's the whole idea behind this. See, we have a goal in our teaching, and a lot of it gets to your mental attitude. That's our goal. This is where we have the privilege of writing on people's hearts. If otherwise, the believer simply becomes a law to himself, pursuing life as if there is no authority higher than his own opinions. 2 Peter 2:10. And guess what? There are authorities higher than your own opinions. I grant you the right to have your opinions. I will fight to the death for your right to have your opinions. But to assume your opinions are God, no, I won't. No, that's not the case. You're allowed to have your opinions. Here, especially those that indulge the flesh in its corrupt desires and despise authority. See, some people absolutely despise authority. And it's, you know, and one of the problems that this gets into is if anybody's ever been under an abusive authority, the real challenge then is not to despise authority after that. And we've all probably had bad teachers or bad leaders or bad whatever, authorities that abuse their authority, bad bosses. But again, this doesn't mitigate against the principle, and it doesn't make it go away. And so the challenge is you can't adopt a bad attitude towards authority because you had a bad encounter with one. You have to say, okay, look, anybody can make a mistake, and just like any other doctrine, you have to forgive and forget and move on. Put it in the past, let it go, okay. Because one day you may be in authority and you may be the one making the mistake. How are you going to want to be treated? You know? So we all foul up. G, the evidence of active submission to authority is first seen in the mental attitude recognition that you do not know it all. Next, in the willingness to listen to the instruction that is provided. And finally, in the willingness to fastidiously obey that instruction. H, there is a major difference between the attitude of simply resigning oneself to being under authority and the willing zeal to accept authority and acclimate to it. There's a big difference between those two things. And I'm telling you, what God's looking for in the mental attitude is the willing zeal to accept authority and acclimate to it. I, those that have been given any sphere of authority, are expected to exercise that authority with a mental attitude of humility and for the good of others. As per the example of Christ, I think, where he said, the Son of Man did not come to serve, or rather to be served, but to serve. Well, actually, this is a different one, but this is good, too. Because they're all disputing. If you remember this, when we studied John, the last night, they're getting ready. Jesus is getting ready to go up into the upper room. And on the way to the upper room, all the disciples, unbeknownst to Jesus, theoretically, of course, he knew, they're all back and forth at each other. You know, I'm the greatest. No, I'm the greatest. No, I'm the greatest believer. I'm the best believer. He picked me before he picked you. That kind of nonsense that people do. And I remember back when we were fundies, that was, how long have you been saved? Oh, I've been saved 4 years. Oh, well, I'm 5 years old, so I must be more mature than you are. Lord must love me more. Kind of nonsense. Childish stuff that you see out of believers. And the disciples were engaging in this that night. Who's the greatest? I'm the greatest. And he knew all about this. I mean, here he is facing the biggest test of his life, obviously, and this is all they can come up with. So the disciples don't get high marks on this one. They flunked this test badly. And he said to them, the Lord, the kings of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who have authority over them are called benefactors. But not so with you. But let him who is the greatest among you become as the youngest. You know how that always goes, like you're out of camp and whatever. The youngest guy always gets the dirty end of the stick. And the leader as the servant. For who is greater, the one who reclines at the table or the one who serves? Is it not the one who reclines? But I am among you as one who serves. Indicating, of course, that you ought to emulate my attitude. J, abuse of authority spans the extremes from the tyrannical autocrat. My authority has no limits. My words are all powerful. I am the great and mighty Oz. To laissez-faire. Well, I have authority, but I can't use it. Those are the two extremes. And both extremes are wrong. Nobody has total authority. And if you do have authority, you are expected to use it. And this is the laissez-faire approach, the passive, no direction, no discipline. And guess what? You can't think for people. You can't run their lives for people, even if you do know better. It doesn't work that way. And you have to just deal with it. Accept that at a certain level. This is one of the frustrations of the ministry, is to know how to get up and teach, maintain a good mental attitude, have some confidence that the Word of God is going to work in the lives of these people, even when you see them failing and failing badly, and continue to recognize that God's dealing with them just like he's dealing with me. It is God who is at work within you, both to will and to do his good pleasure. My word will not return to me void till it comes back, until it goes forth and does that which I've sent it to do. And so you have to have all that and recognize, you know what, at a certain level, I've got to just cut them loose and let them go. Even though, they're believers and I love them, I can't live their lives for them. And I'm not going to attempt to. God, you make yourself crazy doing that. So those are the two extremes. Both are wrong. And then there's you'll figure it out someday. I'm not ever going to give you any advice or personal direction or guidance. Well, that's not what a shepherd does. You're allowed to give advice and direction and guidance. And just as a shepherd, let me warn you. Just prepare for the inevitability that when somebody comes to you and says, Ron, what should I do? That they're going to do just the opposite of what I tell them. And you just can't let that bother you. You give them good, sound, doctrinal advice, and then when they walk off in the opposite direction, you say, well, I did right by it. And then you take that and you move on. That's all you can do. And you can't let that make you nuts. No nuttier than you are already, let's say. Okay, the adjusted authority will commend himself to others by virtue of his orientation to the chain of command and the consistent application of sound doctrine that results in a lifestyle that invites emulation. This is being, and that's a part of being an example. Hopefully over the years, you will see that, guess what, Ron isn't just all talk. He follows through with this. He does it, he practices it in his own life, and blah, 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 blah. And yeah, I'd like to, I want to be like Ron. I mean, hopefully at some point you'll realize that you don't have to be exactly like me. Nobody could be that cool. But you can say, well, you know, I see the doctrine works in his life. Yeah. Everything he's taught has pretty well come true. He hasn't misled us. He hasn't abused us. He hasn't run us ragged. He hasn't done any of this stuff. And guess what? It still works. The doctrine still works. So, although authorities are not and do not have to be perfect, each believer should recognize that mental attitude, arrogance that rejects authority, will bring divine discipline on him. God is against the arrogant. That's a fact. That's supposed to be James 4:6, by the way. God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. And M, our phase three position and authority in the millennial kingdom will be commensurate with our willingness to adhere to these important principles during our phase two, as seen in Revelation there, the promise that him who overcomes and keeps my deeds to the end, to him I will give authority over the nations. And we'll see that coming up in some chapters in the future, that ultimately that authority is going to be given to believers that orient to these principles and who continue to plow in there and hang in till the very end. All right, we will be ready to take up with Revelation 11 on Sunday morning. Thank you, Father, for the privilege of studying your word. May God the Holy Spirit enlighten us in Christ's name. Amen.